Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Investments. Complicated? Not when you talk to a financial broker about a Zurich investment plan.
Now, much of the programme today is going to be reflections and tributes to one of the architects of the Good Friday Agreement, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, the co-founder of the SDLP, John Hume, who has died, as you know, after a long illness. We're going to open with a speech that he made to the Washington Press Club in March 1994, in the critical months before the first IRA ceasefire, conveying to an American audience the scale of the Northern Irish Troubles.
We have 1.5 million people who live in the north of Ireland. Of those people, we have lost 3,200 in the last 20 years of conflict, and 30,000 people have been maimed. Put in terms that you would understand, that means 500,000 people killed in political conflict in this country, and 5 million maimed. And in the city of Belfast, as I often say, as a result of that conflict, it's the highest church-going city in Western Europe on both sides of our divide. It's been necessary to build not one but 13 walls to separate and protect one section of a Christian people from another. Those walls are an indictment of every one of us.
Eamon McCann, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Commiserations on yours and Derry's, indeed all of our loss. You listen to him there. It's obvious that he was, above all else, a teacher, an explainer, and an absolutely brilliant communicator.
Oh, he was. I mean, John, and he was also consistent. I mean, which is very important to his influence. It was consistent to the point, really, of boring people at times, because he kept hammering on, not only at the same points, but in the same language. And if he was challenged on that, as I and many others did, John, can you not think of anything else to say? And he would reply, I'm going to keep saying it until everybody agrees with me. And he did. And eventually, of course, everybody in the sense of people of political influence and status, not just in Ireland but elsewhere, did come around to the same point of view as John had. You know, and he's I mean, John wouldn't have shared my politics at all. But I think I can say that particularly sort of after the hectic days of the 1970s and so on, we were friendly enough to one another. And in latter years, I would say that we were friends.
Does it surprise you that you didn't share a little bit? Does it surprise you that you didn't share a little bit more of each other's politics? Because he came to the fore campaigning on the same social justice issues that would have been very much of your meat and potatoes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we were, broadly speaking, on the same road, but of course you can be marching along the same road while arguing with one another, and I think when we look back on it, that's probably the best way I would have to put it. I mean, when I say we had very different politics, I mean, I was back then, as I think I still am today, sort of, I mean, a socialist who argues for a class perspective on politics, and John was a much more practical person. I'd acknowledge that, sort of, at seeking out sort of agreement on the basis sort of things which were immediately attainable, rather sort of than looking forward to a bright and very different future. But as I
but
say,
he
you
made,
know, you can
he made an impact. He made an impact on the lives of working class people in a very real way by choosing issues like housing and perhaps most significantly credit unions, giving people access to money that didn't have to come from loan sharks.
Yes, of course, he had that effect. I mean, that's just a matter of observation, not a matter for argument. And it was his involvement in the credit union movement. The fact that he founded the first credit union in Ireland, the Derry Credit Union, would have been one of the things that everybody in Derry knew about him. And just as significantly, the fact that he was the main founder of and led what was the University for Derry campaign in 1965. That was a campaign which followed a decision by the unionist authorities not to place a second university in Derry, but to everybody's amazement, in Coleraine, no harm to Coleraine. I mean, the first time I became aware of John really as a public political figure was during that campaign in 1965. I can remember speaking in Guildhall Square, and one of the things that struck me about it is that he made a very robust speech, which went down very well with a packed Guildhall Square. But then he didn't mention partition. He didn't mention unionism, even though we could easily and accurately have blamed unionism for what was happening. And one of the reasons for that, in turn, is I've got a clear picture of him being flanked by Eddie McAteer, at the time a Derry Nationalist MP and leader of the Nationalist Party, and on the other side, that is on the shoulder, Major Gerard Glover, the unionist strongman in Derry. Now, that was something new, and you could say that that didn't last and things fell apart again. Nevertheless, I am convinced that John's experience in founding and leading the University for Derry Committee was far more important to his political formation when he joined the civil rights movement than has generally been acknowledged.
What he did and what he represented, and particularly going on to found the SDLP, would it be fair to say probably more profoundly scared the unionists and those who held the reins of power than anything that had happened in several decades before?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, just a few weeks ago, I was in Ballymena, sort of, it was a strike gathering, and somebody said to me, it says, "Go away. It's you and John Hume wrecked this country," which I found just absolutely bewildering at the time, until sort of I was able to contemplate it and repose a few hours later and could see what he meant, sort of that it was the civil rights movement, and that was something we both were associated with, which actually broke the back of traditional unionism in the North. It certainly wasn't an armed campaign, and it wasn't sort of just mere rhetoric about a united Ireland. It was masses of people on the street looking for justice and equality, and I think that that has been significant and is still significant to this day.
It's quite a long time since he's been active in politics. I think 2004 was when he took a step back following all those abdominal surgeries, which ended up having an impact on his mental health as well. Did Derry wrap its arms around him in the last 16 years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a good way of putting it, that Derry wrapped its arms around him. John wasn't well, and it was known throughout the town. Derry's a small place, and John's a big figure. So it would have been known to everybody that John wasn't well. And then during the last couple of years of his sort of active life, that when he was around Derry, people did look out for him and look after him. All sorts of people. I mean, you could know, the families of people who are, you know, ill in a progressive way, I mean, would sometimes worry if they are out in the world, as it were, that what would happen to them, would they be safe? I don't think that Pat Hume, John's wife, would ever have had. I haven't asked her about this, but I'm sure that she wasn't particularly worried about John's safety or well-being, because she would have known that everybody he met would have looked after him. And that was quite striking, sort of at the end of his active days. Most people in politics, particularly in a divided place like the North and Derry, would have built up some enmity among people, and particularly in Derry. That wasn't true of John. There might have been pockets here and there, but in Derry, he was regarded towards the end of his life very much as a Derry man rather than a figure from, you know, a particular a tradition in Derry.
Eamon McCann, thank you very much for that tribute and insight.